Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. And tomorrow is Juneteenth, also known as Juneteenth Independence Day. And that's a holiday that celebrates the end of slavery in the United States. Juneteenth refers to June 19, 1865, but it wasn't until 2007 that Massachusetts first recognized the holiday. New Hampshire officially recognized the day for the first time last year. As Renee Graham writes in the Boston Globe, in a nation where there are official state holidays for treason and ignominious defeat, Juneteenth deserves far more recognition. Joining me now is Renee Graham. She's a Boston Globe columnist and a WBUR contributor. Hello, Renee.
Hi, Tiziana.
Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Renee, briefly remind us about the history of Juneteenth. Why is this day significant to American history?
It marks the day in June of 1865 when a Union Army general named Gordon Granger arrived in Galveston, Texas, and issued an order emancipating the last of the enslaved people who were there. Because Texas was so far away, they essentially held out for 2 years after Abraham Lincoln had issued the Emancipation Proclamation in 1863. So that news only arrived in Texas in June of 1865, after the Civil War had ended.
Almost 3 years later. When did African Americans begin to really recognize this as their Independence Day, Renee?
Really in the 1980s. I think what happened sort of earlier before that was that people were really reticent in sort of talking about slavery and dealing with slavery, and that included the African-American community as well. I think in the 1980s, especially coming after Roots, which I think was very important, people
this
began
the,
to look
the
at that
television
history.
Television miniseries, Roots. Is that
the,
what you
the
mean?
The landmark television series about the Middle Passage and slavery in America. Mm-hmm. I think people really began to reevaluate that history and embrace it in a very different kind of way. And one of the things that people started to do was have Juneteenth celebrations on June 19th.
So to your point about the 1980s, Texas was the first state to designate the day a holiday. That was in 1980. And there are only 46, well, there are 46 out of 50 states, which 46 is great, but it's not 50. So what message do you think it sends to African Americans in the U.S., not only that it's taken time, you know, as late as last year to get states to adopt Juneteenth Independence Day, but also that not all the states have done so yet?
Well, you know, it's twofold. Not all states have done it yet, but it's also not a holiday, a state holiday, in the way that we think about it being a state holiday. You know, offices aren't closed. There's no suspension of mail delivery. Schools aren't closed. It's not that kind of holiday. So in a weird way, it's kind of like states got to do it without putting any real skin in the game and saying, this is the day we're literally putting aside to observe what happened in 1865. Having said that, there are states who haven't even bothered to do that. You know, I think that's where we are now, where there are still these holdout states that refuse to acknowledge it in any way.
Renee, in your piece, you compare Juneteenth celebration to D-Day and Pride Month celebrations. You say all are about freedom, yet it will receive the least attention. And that means another opportunity is lost for this nation to wrestle honestly with its legacy. Honestly with its legacy of slavery. Tell us more about that.
You know, if you look at what we are observing this month, and, you know, it's very hard to miss all the Pride celebrations. Boston's was a few weeks ago, and the bigger celebration is coming up in New York at the end of the month to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the modern LGBTQ movement. We saw all the commemorations of D-Day in early June, and, you know, getting together people who were there who landed on the beaches of Normandy. And it all would, you know, the subtext of all this is about freedom. It's about the fight for freedom. So is Juneteenth. But I would venture that the average person, if you talk to the street, the average white person doesn't even know what Juneteenth is. They've probably never heard of it because it doesn't get that much attention. African-American communities celebrate it, but it doesn't get much attention beyond that.
One of the lines that really stood out in your op-ed says, Juneteenth is too much of a reminder of this nation's festering sins to be venerated in a country that likes its history noble and sanitized. Do we have to come to grips in a much more deeper and dirtier way with our history of slavery in order to make room for Juneteenth to be honored the way it should be?
Oh my God, yes. I mean, it's without question. I mean, you're talking, you know, over 150 years since the end of the Civil War, and there is still this kind of this reticence, this deep marrow deep reticence in this country to talk about slavery, and not just about what happened for those, you know, centuries past, but how it continues, the repercussions impact every institution and everything that happens today. You know, the racism we deal with today is the remnant of slavery. And so if you don't deal with that, you can't talk about what's happening today. And we still haven't developed the kind of dialogue we need in this country around what happened with slavery, what happened with Reconstruction and Jim Crow and everything that came after that. And I think what happens is, because Juneteenth at its core is about emancipation and about the end of slavery, people just don't want to talk about it. Because to talk about the end of slavery, you have to talk about slavery. And we still, in this nation, for the most part, we just aren't there. We weren't there, you know, 30 years ago. And in some ways, we're probably farther away from it even now because of the current administration.
Renee, I want to bring another voice into this conversation. Malia Lazu is the founder of the Urban Labs, and she runs a Juneteenth commemoration in collaboration with the MFA. Hello, Malia.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm well, thanks, and thanks for joining us. I want to bring you in here. You've been helping spearhead the MFA's Juneteenth celebration for the past 7 years. Tell us how you got connected with the MFA and why you wanted initially to host the celebration there all those years ago.
Definitely. So we had been working on really helping Boston shift its culture through an effort called the Future Boston Alliance. And we were working a lot with Black artists from Boston, which also, I should say, tend to be not necessarily just African-American, but, you know, a lot of diasporatic artists. And we, you know, and they were really pushing for an entry into the MFA. And here's a museum that is world renowned, that sits in Roxbury, that very few people who live in Roxbury feel welcome or had access to. So it was a local artist named James Pierre who approached me to see if we would put something like this together for the MFA. And so we don't have it. I mean, this year it happens to be on June 19th, but we have it around June 19th, and we try to have it every year on a Wednesday so that the museum is free so everyone can come in.
So I have to ask, Malia, as someone who's worked with the MFA for years now and planning this Juneteenth celebration, what was your reaction to hearing about the racist experience that a group of students had there last month? They said they were racially profiled and harassed during a school trip to the MFA.
Well, yeah, we found that out because they were actually supposed to be one of our openers for Juneteenth, the Davis Academy. And so we found out what had happened through the Davis Academy when we were working out their contract. And it, you know, it's a very, very hard position to be in, you know, to be having the Juneteenth celebration for 7 years, having invited Davis Academy to be a part, and now have that, you know, that sort of unraveling. But rightly so. You know, we did not start doing this work with a museum because we thought they were woke. We started doing this work with a museum because we thought that African Americans and Black people have a place in the museum. And the more that we take that space, the more we'll probably see you know, racial incidents until people at all levels of the museum, including their patrons, get the message. So I wasn't surprised at all. I was definitely encouraged to see how the MFA responds, and I hope that the MFA doubles down and continues to do work in the community, you know, with communities that it says it wants to feel welcome in the museum.
And I do want to note that we reached out to the MFA's Chief of Learning and Community Engagement, but the museum said that due to two ongoing investigations, MFA personnel are not able to speak about the incident or about related topics. There has been some discussion in Boston's Black community about the upcoming celebration at the MFA. Adrian Walker, who is another Boston Globe columnist, wrote that tomorrow's celebration now looms as a litmus test for both the museum and the city. And Destiny Polk, who is set to appear on a panel at the MFA's event tomorrow, spoke with WBUR's Amelia Mason about her thoughts.
Any Black person who was asked to do this celebration before the racist incident kind of blew up is probably feeling similar feelings of like, now I have to choose to side with a community that feels really hurt, or do I still show up, you know, for this event that is meaningful, but maybe more questionable now.
Malia, what's your reaction to hearing that?
So my reaction to hearing that is that it's true. I mean, I have to say that we've been doing this for 7 years. Last year, we had almost 5,000 people, and we never got any press around Juneteenth. And now I've been called daily to talk about Juneteenth. So it is a really unfortunate position to be in as someone who has been working with the museum for 7 years to help have a start to integration. I myself see this as a learning moment. But I also understand that we're not a monolith, and that some people are going to, want to no longer come to the MFA and that's their right to do so. I am happy that folks like Sheena Collier did the Boys in the Hood movie earlier this week. We're going to be doing Juneteenth. Most of our artists who have been a part of Juneteenth for the last 7 years have gone back to the museum as, paid curated artists for the late night parties or other things. So I think, relationship building is slow, and allies, when they're learning how to be allies, mess up. And it's up to, every individual whether you want to give the generosity of interpretation to the museum.
Renee, in just a few seconds, is there anything you'd like to add? Any last thoughts?
I just think it's important for people to see Juneteenth not just as this African-American celebration, but as this quintessentially American holiday that looks at the potential of freedom in this country for everyone. That's why I see Juneteenth as our real Independence Day.
And that's Renee Graham. She's a Boston Globe columnist and a WBUR contributor. Thanks, Renee.
Thank you.
And Malia Lazou, founder of the Urban Labs, who runs the Juneteenth commemoration in collaboration with the MFA. Thank you, Malia.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR. I'm Tiziana Deering. Join us again tomorrow.